Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, January 19th, and it's the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. We are reading from the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We're on page 56, the second paragraph down. One night while confined in a hospital, and through the italics, which is the little second paragraph, ending with, "Who are you to say there is no God?" And we will study both of those paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Joanne L., the 12 Traditions, Liz A., and the readers of the text are Leslie M., Sherry Z., and Shelley E. The share ID for our Wednesday, yesterday, January 18th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 19,863. That's 19863. And for today's, I forgot to put it in here, let me see what Leia said. For Thursday, January 19th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 19,869. That's 19869. And our newcomer greeter is Jody E., and our announcement person is Leslie W. Thank you all for your service. The OA Preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery, and I will now ask Joanne L. to read the 12 Steps of OA. Good morning, Joanne.
Thank you, Mo. Thank you very much. Yes, this is Joanne L. from Rhode Island, recovered in Rhode Island. And thank you for your service today, Mo. Seems like people have missed you. The 12 Steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you very much for letting me do service, and I pass.
Oh, thank you very much, Joanne, for stepping up there for us. And now I will now ask Liz A. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Mo. This is Liz A., recovered compulsive overeater for today from Los Angeles, California. These are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service, Mo, and I pass.
Thank you, Liz A., for giving us service this month. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to remute your phone again. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 56, starts with the second paragraph down, one night when confined in a hospital, and we're going to read through the italics, which is another, it's not really a paragraph, it's a sentence. Who are you to say there is no God? And I will now ask Leslie M. to get us started. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service. I am Leslie M. I'm a compulsive overeater, recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. One night, when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question, "Is it possible that all the religious people I've known are wrong?" While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God? You know, this paragraph is one that I use all the time. And when I talk about my early religious training, I say, and my early childhood experiences, you know, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. A line I use all the time. That's how I felt. I grew up in a household that was very dysfunctional, and you know, I knew that if somebody was going to take care of it, if it was going to get done right, it had to be done by me. And I lived that way in OA for 28 years before I got recovered, thinking that there was something else that I was supposed to be doing. You know, but when I actually, it was in this chapter in We Agnostics, as I was going through the book, and I had decided that what I had to do when I went through the book again was that I had to believe that everything in this book is true. And that if I have a problem, I don't believe it, then I have to look at myself. And I finally got to that point, you know, where it says here, while pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell, you know. And until I got to that point and was able to say, I am out of ideas, you know, please help me, you know. And who am I to say anything at this point? You know, I've learned, that's what one thing I've learned in recovery, in being recovered, is that, you know, I don't know is the thing that I need to say the most probably in my life, because I don't know what's right for anyone else. There are times when I don't even know what's right for myself. You know, that's when I use the pause. That's when I go to God and say, okay, what's next? What do I do now? So, you know, the fact that I was that arrogant all those years to think that there was something else I was supposed to be doing, you know, the thing about this compulsive overeating, and I am one of the hopeless variety, is that, you know, I didn't give myself this disease and I can't remove it. I needed that higher power. So who am I to say that there isn't a God out there to help me, you know? And as I came to believe and believed that this book was true, and found that there is a power greater than myself that is helping me all the time. You know, sometimes it's in little ways, sometimes it's in big ways. But I have that presence in my life on a very regular and continuous basis. Certainly not 24/7. I'm human. Things happen. But I know where to go back to today. And I know that it's not me working harder, faster, or stronger that's going to do it. It's me, which is counterintuitive. It's me saying, you know, I can't do this. Help me, you know, and just taking that step back and that breath and saying, okay, here I am, God. What am I supposed to be doing now? And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you very much for getting us started, Leslie M. I'll remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 56, the second paragraph down. One night when confined in a hospital, and we're reading through the italics, who are you to say there is no God? Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I will take the names of those who'd like to share.
Irene B.
Wendy B.
Irene. Wendy.
Carla C.
Bruce E.
Deborah G.
Sherry.
Nancy L.
Sherry Josie.
Nancy L. And I'll take the, what was that? Carrie? Sherry Jo. And Sherry. That, I'll stop there. Sherry Josie. Okay. Josie. That's seven. All right. I have Irene B, Wendy B, Carla, I think it's T, Bruce E, Deborah G, Nancy, I didn't get your last initial, but I'll get it, and Sherry Jo C. All right, let's start with Irene B. Good morning, Irene. Everybody else mute, please.
Hi, thank you for telling me. I was talking away. Thank you so much for your service. God bless you. Oh my gosh, this chapter is telling my experience at the first eating. Oh, I'm Irene B., a very grateful recovered bulimic from Louisiana. So in the first eating disorders treatment center that I went to, I remember that organically, without anyone telling me anything about it, at least no instructions that I could tell. I was laying in the hospital bed, and I just remember actually crying. And back in those days, tears did not come to me easily. It was very difficult to cry. But I was at such a bottom. I have a low, low, low bottom, and which means that I can take a lot of abuse and punishment, you know, either inflicted by others or mostly self-inflicted. And I was at that point, and I organically went to God and cried out for help. And something must have happened or something. Of course, I didn't recover from bulimia for another 20 years because I didn't do it. God did it for me. And that's why today I see God all over my life, healing so many areas of my life, left and right, left and right. And I just have to go to him, you know, because he's a respectful gentleman. I have to keep going to him, and I'm learning how to do that. And that's for another share. What I wanted to say that as a child, you know what, I don't, you know, I've always said I would never, ever, ever want to go back to my childhood, ever. No amount of money would entice me to go back to that place, to that time. And I just remember feeling so abandoned by God. It's like, and I, in those words, I've said those. If there is a God, he's sure not done anything for me. And of course, that's a matter of perspective, my inability to see. Because in hindsight, I am able to see that God was there, just not in the way that I wanted him to be. Because, of course, I want to show, to run the show, and I want to tell God what God needs to do for me. He needs to avoid pain for me, and perhaps what he did, he equipped me with the wherewithal on how to get through it and not die. And I didn't see, thank you, I'm just going to say, I couldn't see the grace in that. And now I thank God that I can, and my heart overflows with gratitude. Because if I go to him, he'll be there for me. With that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Irene B. Wendy B., followed by Carla T. Wendy?
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And I just love that line, you know, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me, because that's just so, such a self-centered, typical addict way of thinking. You know, we pray for God to fix a problem, you know, that we created. You know, we ask for a magic cure. We ask God to get us out of a jam. You know, we ask him to change, you know, other people and situations, you know, that we feel aren't fair, you know, things that cause us discomfort. And we want to play God, you know. We want him to play by our rules, you know, and do what we want, you know, just like a kid, you know, who picks up his toys and goes home, you know. You know, when the other kid wouldn't do things his way, I'm gonna go, you know, and we have a risk with God because he doesn't do things our way. And you know, I love how he starts to question his beliefs. You know, can you know all the religious people I've known be wrong? You know, and you know, he's starting to look at his preconceived ideas and his prejudices. And, you know, he's opening up to the possibility that he could be wrong, you know, and that just opens the door for God to speak truth to him. You know, he was just given a glimpse, you know, to see his rightful place of humility before his creator, you know, and God spoke clearly to him, "Who are you to question my existence?" You know, and that just brought him to his knees. And I'm just so grateful for this clear example of what surrender looks like, you know, how we let go of our preconceived notions and embrace truth, you know, from God's perspective and align ourselves up to it. And thank you for letting me share.
And thank you, Wendy B. Carla T., I think it is. Good morning, Carla.
Thank you, everyone. This is Carla C. in California, gratefully recovered. Compulsive overeater. God, I just love the shares today. You know, yesterday I was having a poor me kind of day, you know, like, okay, everything's going wrong and I'm starting to blame God for it. And, you know, I just get on the phone and I talk to my fellows, and my fellows tell me, give yourself some love, give yourself some compassion, because me without my higher power, I'm really hard on myself. And that's why this program works, you know. It's a we program, and I'm not alone, and I'm just so grateful that I'm not, and that I have a power outside of me or inside of me that loves me so much, and that tells me that I'm sweet and kind, and I just have to believe it. So thanks for letting me share. Carla in California.
Thank you, Carla. From California. Next up, Bruce E., followed by Deborah G. Bruce,
yes,
star one.
It's right.
Oh, there
I'm
you
here,
are.
Mo. Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. Yes, thank you. And I'm here because I'm not all there. But so I'm Bruce E., I'm in Florida, and I'm recovered. And thank you, God. Great reading. And, I've been waiting around for this part of the reading to come up. I love this. And so this guy's pretty low bottom, I assume. And he's in a hospital. And guy must have shared with him something about God. And then he says, who are you? You know, then he ain't done anything for me lately. And then, who are you to say there's no God? So, well, I kind of had that experience, sort of. My mom was religious, and I knew she was. She didn't come on to me about it. She just told me to had to go to this Lutheran church and go through confirmation, which I hated doing. Didn't get much out of it, and but I did it for her. And then I didn't darken a doorstep of a church for 30 years after that, probably. So I didn't believe. I was an atheist, so I didn't have any belief in God. I didn't think there was a God. I didn't see any evidence of it, I didn't think. And I just was totally in the dark on that whole issue. And that's the way I lived for a long time. And so I saw religious people, my mom and others, and I saw them doing religious things, and I saw them doing pretty good in their lives, but I wanted to just do anything I wanted to do. You know, I just wanted to, you know, I'm not going to do all that stuff these people are doing, and I'm going to do that. It looked boring, you know, it just looked like it was, you know, not a lot of fun, and I wanted to have fun. So I went my own way for a lot of years, and finally I had one of those experiences similar to this guy. I didn't say, who are you to say there, or I mean, I didn't say if God is there, he hadn't done anything for me yet, because I didn't believe in God. I was you know, like I say, as an atheist, so I wouldn't have said that. But I found out that I was wrong, that there is a God, not me, but it's a God that loves me and immensely cares about me, doesn't push anything on me, and lets me make my own choices. And I made a choice to eat all that food over all those years, and now I make a choice not to live that way anymore. So, and I know the only way I can do it is through God helping me. You know, otherwise I'd never make it. So thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Bruce E. Up next is Deborah G., followed by Nancy. I didn't get your last initial, Nancy. Good morning, Deborah.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Good morning. I'm Deborah G. from Arizona, and thank you so much, Mo, for your service this morning and everyone's service this morning and making this meeting possible. And just all the shares. I just love hearing that beautiful, divine, loving presence in your voices this morning. And I'm so grateful that I can hear that, you know. And I was remembering when it was says in here, you know, I really had a struggle with my food for many, many years, relapse and trying different programs and everything. And it was because I wasn't surrendered. And I love the word someone used, that surrender to God in this area. You know, I had recovery in my other areas of addictions, but in the food, I just wouldn't let God in. I wouldn't trust God with this addiction with my food, you know, because I wasn't surrendered. I wanted to continue. I kept telling myself the lies, you know, excuses, the justifications, you know, all the things that aren't of God, you know, all self, like was shared too, the self-centeredness, you know, and it's so, now I can see it, now that I'm aware, conscious of it, I can see the insanity of it, and I can see the ridiculousness of how I carried that on and the suffering that I caused myself by doing that. And I remember when I finally, it was an alcoholic food that I wasn't willing to give up. When I finally surrendered that alcoholic food and put it down, got myself a vision sponsor, and she took me through the steps quickly, was I able to invite that beautiful, loving presence, that power that I had no power over with the food, into my life, into my experience, into my recovery, into every area. It was just beautiful. And it was like that transformation where it was done to me, not by me, but it was all about my surrender. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah G. Up next is Nancy. I'll get your last initial when you come on, Nancy, and your state, and then followed by Sherry Joe C., and then we'll take a lineup after Sherry Joe. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. This is Nancy L. in Riverside, California. Thank you, everybody, for being on the line. And I just wanted to share something really short, but I'm really glad that there's something bigger than me, because if I have a problem that I can't figure out in myself and there's nothing bigger than me, nobody can figure that problem out. And it's a problem. If there's something bigger than me, then I can rely on whatever that is to solve a problem that's bigger than myself. And through the program, I actually got closer to my higher power, and I was actually, and I'm still, the daily process, learning to hand over every aspect of this. And this week I had to turn over another food that I fought until I surrendered to the higher power, asking for the will on how to do it, and then the ability to do it. And so I'm just grateful that there is something bigger than me, because I don't have it all figured out. So thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Nancy L. And before I take Sherry Josie, let me tell everybody where we're at. We're on page 56. The second paragraph starts out one night when confined in a hospital, and it ends in the next little paragraph, who are you to say there is no God? And after Sherry Joe, I'll take another lineup. Good morning, Sherry Joe.
Morning, Mo. Thanks so much. This is Sherry Josie, recovered in Southern California. I love this paragraph. I as the years have gone on in OA and having more continuous back-to-back abstinence, I start to laugh more when I read the big book. And the reason I laugh is because it's funny to me now, looking back, how dramatic I was. You know, I mean, in this paragraph, it's like there's so much drama and, you know, extreme emotion. He bitterly cried out alone in his room. You know, I agree with the prior shares. This is self-centeredness of the compulsive eater, the addict mentality. Of course he's alone in his room. He's alone in his room because he's thinking only of himself, thinks he's had it worse than anyone else. I don't know how I used to think I had it worse than anybody else when there's a whole entire planet of people, a good portion who are legitimately suffering. And, you know, so for me, you know, a lot of recovery is just like getting my thinking straight. And I was thinking about the part of the big book where it says, you know, the primary problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind. You know, it's this thinking and the bitterness. It's already talking about resentment. He's bitter. All the terrible things that have happened to him. Well, yeah, a lot of us have had a lot of crap happen to us. You know, I mean, even the paragraph from yesterday, it's like we grow up in these situations. I had an extreme religious situation in my growing up that was super abusive. It was sick, you know, but it's like this thinking where it's only happening to me and no one can understand and all of this. And, you know, for me, that's why, you know, when I first came into the program, 1989, my home group that got me abstinent, Saturday morning, back to basics, abstinence in Detroit, Michigan. You know, it's like, get the food out, you know, put the food down, get food sober. And I didn't do it with a higher power. I did it with the support of my group and by making a commitment, no matter what, every single day to put the food down. And finally, you know, once the fog started clearing out of my brain, I started being able to see myself as I really was. And I started being able to see the other people in my group as human beings. They've been through things too. You know, not only myself, but these people in my group. Then I started having, you know, a bigger awareness of, you know, people in my community, people in my family, people in the world, you know, everyone going through their own personal struggle. You know, compulsive eating is just one teeny tiny part of this entire universe, you know, and the self-centeredness of this paragraph where, and legitimately, you know, we feel so alone with our problems. Well, who's put us there? You know, I put myself there because every time I had a problem, I ran away from it. Alcoholic in full flight from reality. All I could do is like nosedive into a big bowl or whatever. And, you know, again, legitimately, I mean, it is an illness. I mean, problem centers in my mind, but it's also in my body. I'm just grateful to have this program to straighten out our thinking, and great to be here with you guys. Thanks. Pass.
Thank you, Sherry Josie. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I'll take a list of names of who would like to share on this two paragraphs.
Bridget,
Sherry,
B.
And
Leah.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Wait. Sherry,
I think
B.
I heard a Brit. Did I hear a Brit?
Yes, Brit V.
Okay,
Gaylene
got you.
B.
Then I. Gaylene.
Sherry Z.
Carrie N.
Who was that N?
Carrie N.
Oh, Carrie N.
No,
one more.
I think you wrote my name down wrong. It's Sherry Z.
Sherry Z.
Yeah, I think you wrote Carrie Z.
Oh, okay. No, I have Sherry Z and I have Carrie N. And then, did I hear
Leah S? Yeah.
Yeah. Leah S. All right, let's stop there. I may not be able to get you all. All right. Britt V, you're up first, followed by Gaylene B. Good morning, Britt.
Hi, thank you so much. It's been a long time since I shared. I just listen and lurk. Thank you for your service, Mo. This paragraph means a lot to me. And in my particular case, I always had a belief in God. I remember being a very, very small child and feeling the presence of God with me. My problem is that I had a misunderstanding of who God was. When in the paragraph he says, he certainly hasn't done anything for me, I think that's where I was. I was ascribing characteristics to the God of my understanding that were the characteristics of the people that abused me when I was a kid. And that was a faulty understanding of God. The God of my understanding now is loving, compassionate, present. And I now understand for myself that when people do bad things to other people, God is always present, but that's not God's desire. At least that's my perception. People have free will and they do terrible things to others. But the God of my understanding is loving and accepting and kind. And program and my dear sponsor have really, really helped me to change my perception of the God of my understanding to be that all-loving God. And for me to understand that God is in the driver's seat, he makes miracles out of my messes, that what I need to do is to focus on program, to focus on my own development, and then just remain open. Let the God of my understanding invite in my life the things that I need to be of greater service in the world. My favorite part of the big book is service, helping others, is the cornerstone of our recovery. And that's what it's all about. So I'm really grateful for program because it's a spiritual program. Yes, it's helped me immensely with my own issues with food and overeating. But more importantly, it's really changed my definition of who the God of my understanding is and how I interact with the God of my understanding in my life. And it's just been so transformative, and so many good things have resulted with my just surrendering, letting go, and turning it over to God. So I'm really, really grateful to be among all of you. Thank you so much, and I pass.
Perfect timing. Thank you, Britt. Up next is Gaylene B, followed by Sherry Z. Good morning, Gaylene.
Good morning, everybody. This is Gaylene B calling from Idaho, spending the winter in Arizona. This is a great paragraph. I've had a lot of feelings this morning as I read through the paragraph early this morning and pondered it before the meeting, and I feel like I came to this life with a sense of belief, but a lot of judgment about God, not seeing him anywhere in my childhood, with the extreme child abuse, physical and emotional, that my siblings and I suffered. And I thought, well, if you don't think of me, I'm not going to think of you. And I can see back, one of my sponsors in the program had me do an inventory on my relationship with my higher power, and it really opened my eyes to see that while I went through a lot of really rough experiences, my higher power was there. He didn't leave me. He can't take another's agency, but he did stay with me and kept me safe in high school, brought me into a marriage with somebody who would prick me, who would pour salt in all of my wounds. And then my higher power gifted me with two sons who were addicts, which is what actually brought me into recovery and began my healing process. As I went through my healing process, I became extremely angry with my higher power. Just the anger was intense and deep and wrathful. And but I remember sitting in a trauma class one night and having a feeling sink deep into my heart. I can take your anger. Give it to me. Let me have it. Pour it out. And I realized, oh, wow, you're so much safer than my earthly father. And you really can handle my anger. And you do love me. And that was really the beginning of my heart opening up to a deeper relationship with my higher power. And I can see that he's been there often through my life, protecting me, guiding me, teaching me, giving me little words of advice and counsel, and redirecting me when I got so off track. And I know it's him who I call my higher power my Heavenly Father, but I believe that He's the one that continually gets me through the rough experiences, got me through COVID over the holidays, and is helping me recover. It's because of my higher power that I'm able to have 36 days of abstinence, which I haven't had in so long. And I just, I'm grateful to my higher power and also the experiences that I've had with Him, both the good and the bad, because they've melted together to make up the relationship that I have with my higher power. And I'm truly grateful for that. And I'll leave that with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Gaylene. Perfect timing. Sherry Z, followed by Carrie N. Sherry, good morning.
Good morning, Mo, and good morning, all visionaries. Thank you for your service. I'm Sherry V in California. I'm so grateful to be here today. This short line, "Who are you to say there is no God?" struck me in such a powerful way, because this is the moment He says, "I may not know. I may not be right. I may be wrong." And for so many years, I was so convicted about my rightness. I can eat these foods, but not these foods. I can do this, but not this. I was so sure that I was right. And even though I believed in God, for so many years, I thought, you know what, God, you don't know this part. You don't understand this part. And this moment where He says, "Who are you to say there is no God?" That moment that I said 14 months ago, "I don't know. I don't know why 31 years I've been in these rooms and I cannot get entirely recovered. And I'm willing to possibly actually be wrong, that the way I've been doing it is not right." And that was with the belief in God, but it was about surrender. And then what it says, it poured over and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide, it said. Every morning when I pray, I feel God sort of, not every single morning, but I feel God say, "I got this. You may be wrong, so stay humble." And that's what I didn't want to hear, and that's what I most needed to hear. Stay humble. I'm in charge, not you. So I'm so grateful to be recovered in this program. It says at the end, "He lived in constant companionship with His Creator, which is my ideal." That every day that I am saying that in all my affairs. So thank you so much.
And thank you, Sherry Z. We have Carrie N. and followed by Leah S. I think we're going to do perfect. Carrie N.
Hi, I'm Carrie N. and I'm from Orange County, California. And the book says, "One night, when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience." So 11 days ago, I found somebody from Vision to go through the Big Book with me. And that's the experience that I've had with this person, is that she's letting me know that she has had a spiritual experience. And then the other part is the part about, is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? So once again, I'm surrounded by people who I know have a similar condition to me, and that by watching what they do and listening to what they say, and I completely believe that they have recovery, that I then can believe in this process that's required from me. And because I've had recovery, and I'm now struggling with eating on my food plan. And so today we were reading about Jim and Carpet Slippers and Fred. And what I never noticed before was that Fred, he got to the place where he said, "Yeah, definitely, I am beyond, I can see that I am an alcoholic. I mean, there's no question about it. And gosh, I can never pick up alcohol again." And then he went ahead and did it. And it never occurred to me that I've left out that part about I'm at that place where I know I can't eat. I can't control what I eat. And so now it's time for me to do like my sponsor has done. An alcoholic who has known a spiritual experience. So I am grateful to be able to read about that, that it's not enough for me to know my condition, that now it's time for me to get on to the spiritual experience part. And no problem, because I know that you guys did it that way. And so I'm going to go ahead and follow along. Just want to express my gratitude for the way that you guys do your recovery so I can watch it and do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. And up, I think, last will be Leah S. We've got 3 minutes for you, Leah.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. Good morning. My name is Leah S., recovered and grateful in Brooklyn, New York. So I have a conception. When I came into program, I had this conception. Don't tell me what to do, because I know more about diets and food than you could ever imagine. And you've never met the real McCoy like you have met me. And so I was very stubborn and very conceited in my own beliefs. And when I read that paragraph, who says there is no other God, I didn't entertain, you know. And my sponsor kept telling me this prayer, please, and I used to say it, please, dear God, set aside everything that I know and everything that I think I know about myself and my disease and the people and relationships and situations. And all of a sudden, my mind opened up, just like Bill's. You know, when he saw Ebby, he said, wait a minute, this guy also used to believe the same way that I do. And we used to be such great drinking buddies. And what's going on here? You know what? Give me an open mind, dear God. Give me an open mind. Let me be objective. Why am I so stubborn? And I keep punishing my body again and again and again. And that's where my recovery began. And this entire book is so wise, more than I can ever stop talking about. But anyway, I'll let you find out when we all do this study together. And with that, I will pass.
And thank you, Leah S. I want to thank everyone that gave service on this meeting: Joanne L., Liz A., Leslie M., Sherry Z., Shelley E. And our newcomer greeter will be Jody E., followed by announcements, which is Leslie W. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Sherry Z. to read a vision for you.
Thank you, Mo. Sherry Z., recovered in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you have not got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.